The following is a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This Earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It is Wednesday, April 29th, 2015. Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 141, a production of Galactic Netcasts. I'm Dave Nelson. Joining me tonight is Brad Ludwig, sans Anessa Moyens. Did I use that word right?
Yes.
Okay.
It means without.
Okay, good. Because I hear other people use it, but I wasn't sure if it was the absolute right context. But I'm glad that it was.
Oh, it's perfect.
So what's up with Anessa? Just taking a few weeks off from podcasts?
Yeah, she's got some other projects that she wants to finish up, and she just wanted to take a break to try to get that stuff done. So
okay, understandable. I completely agree. I agree with her decision.
She wholeheartedly.
She went through all the channels. She filled out the proper vacation form. She submitted it. To HR, and then it was brought to me to sign. I signed it, and everything was good. So, not getting in trouble when she gets back. So, just tell her she's fine.
I will do so.
All right. So, welcome everybody to the show where we talk about extraterrestrials and their appearances in film, TV, video games, comic books, science, real life. I could go on, Brad. But
you could.
I'm not going to.
Instead, because we have a show to do.
Yeah, and the show is broken down into three segments: the news, that's the news of the week; the craft corner, the spotlight of a certain kind of alien spacecraft; and our picks for the week. If you want to watch us do the show, like on camera, on video, live, even, just follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. We always announce when we're going live, or watch us later. Either at our live page at galacticnetcasts.com or at youtube.com/galacticnetcasts. Did I cover everything?
I think you did.
Okay, let's get it started.
In the news.
And I like this. I think we've got this down to a science. We usually cover something that is fantastical or, you know, out there somehow. We cover an entertainment story and a science story, and that's what it looks like you have in the first story.
I most certainly do, and we've been talking quite a bit about studying exoplanets and working towards discovering alien life, and I ran across this story, and it really intrigued me, and it's from Fox News, of all places.
Hang on. Brad, don't go anywhere. Don't continue that.
Okay.
So you said Fox News?
It's from Fox News.
Okay, now you can continue.
The Wilhelm scream never gets old, my friend.
No.
The title of this is How Studying Saturn, Moon, Titan Could Unlock Secrets of Alien Planets. Now, with nearly 2,000 confirmed planets now known beyond our solar system, astronomers are attempting to identify the atmospheres of these distant bodies to determine if they could possibly host life. Observers struggle with trying to distinguish haze signals from gas signals from noise. Tyler Robinson of NASA's Ames Research Center in Moffett Field, California, told Astrobiology Magazine by email, "We've provided an almost noise-free data set to help exoplanet observers better interpret their observations." Robinson, I apologize. Robinson served as lead author on a study that used NASA's Saturn-orbiting Cassini spacecraft to examine Titan in a new way. Now, why Titan? Why do you think that they would be observing Titan?
Because I want to say it's the closest that we may come in our solar system to an exoplanet.
There is that, yes, absolutely. The other thing, too, is it's a great testing ground for the atmosphere of Titan is very hazy, and they want to be able to, we've talked about spectroscopy before, actually, and we're going to get to that in the story in a second. And the difficulty of that is if you've got a hazy atmosphere, you're detecting the haze and not necessarily what is actually on the planet. And those two things are very different, but what's actually happening on the planet is more important because it needs to have the building blocks of life for it to be worth our time to study it further. As distant planets pass in front of stars, light passes through the atmosphere. By studying that passage with a variety of wavelengths using a method known as transit spectroscopy, scientists can see how the signals change with each observation and determine the composition of the atmosphere. Some exoplanets have returned featureless readings with no signs indicating atmospheric composition. To scientists, this suggests a high layer of clouds or haze in the atmosphere that absorbs the light from the star, blocking readings of the lower atmosphere that can tell scientists more about the planet's atmosphere and its potential habitability. There is no problem detecting high-altitude cloud layers in the atmospheres of exoplanets. In fact, they're usually quite obvious. Heather Knutson of the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena. The real problem is that these cloud layers are hiding the atmospheric absorption signals we are trying to measure, she said. In some cases, high-altitude clouds can make a small planet with a puffy, hydrogen-rich atmosphere look like it has a much more compact atmosphere made of heavier gases, such as water or carbon dioxide. To understand how high-altitude hazes can affect the passage of light through the atmosphere, Robinson and his team used Cassini to study Titan. Using Cassini, they observed the sun rising and setting through the huge moon's atmosphere, a process known as occultation. For this setup, the spacecraft is located fairly close to the moon, while the source of light, the sun, is relatively far away. For exoplanet studies, the situation is reversed. The host star is relatively close to the planet, while observers on Earth are far away from the system. Although other solar bodies have photochemical hazes, Titan is a great example of a body whose observable atmosphere is dominated by hazes. It's also a nice object to study because it has a solid surface and a relatively thin atmosphere, and therefore might be a good analog for a terrestrial exoplanet with a photochemical haze layer. The team found that the haze did a better job of blocking out blue light than red, rather than blocking all light equally as hazes were assumed to do. This means that exoplanets that were assumed to have Titan-like hazes but returned flat, featureless spectra could also have atmospheres dissimilar to that of the Saturn moon. The solar system is filled with many types of worlds, and scientists have used them in the past to attempt to understand exoplanets. Frequently, however, they have done so by modeling the planets from a great distance so that it appears only as a small point of light. This method models how more exoplanets may be studied in the future, using a method known as direct imaging. Although most exoplanets today are studied using transit spectroscopy, no one had previously observed the transit spectra of solar system objects as points of comparison. Titan may be the best solar system example of a hazy body, but the worlds can offer insight into the variety of exoplanets scientists are likely to discover. That was a long story.
That's long, complicated, with a whole bunch of big words.
Yeah, I only stumbled in a few places, you know, but the thing about it is, and I cut some stuff out, and we have the, you'll be able to find the link in the show notes to read the entire story from Fox News science department. But what I left in there was all very important. It's the having a sandbox sort of environment where we know a lot about Titan. We don't know everything about Titan, but we know a lot about it. And having a celestial body that we can observe and use as a test bed to improve the techniques that we use to discover exoplanet. Well, not discover, but discovering the chemical composition of the atmospheres, what these alien life forms, whatever they may be, intelligent or otherwise, would be breathing, says a lot. And using this as the test bed is a very intelligent way to go.
It's like we have our very own laboratory to kind of try things out, before we do it for real, right?
Correct.
Huh. That's neat. I didn't think that we could use anything in our, any planetary body in our solar system as a, I had the really cool word in my head for a second, but then it disappeared. something that stands in for something else. What's a good word to use?
Proxy.
Proxy. There you go. I had a different one though. I hate how my brain works sometimes, Brad. It sucks. Getting old sucks.
It's all right.
I just recently read that, and you may have heard this too, they observed the color of a planet for the first time, the color of an exoplanet for the first time. And I don't know how they did that, but it sounds like one of these techniques that you talked about, seeing the actual okay. color of the atmosphere.
Sure.
But that's all I got.
No, doing tests and test runs to help improve the science of detection is a wonderful thing. And it's only going to serve us, you know, we might end up based on these techniques, maybe going back over some planets that have been assumed to be flat atmospherically. And now maybe it will prove to be a little bit different. You know, it'll mm-hmm. be seen as something that could actually foster life.
It's going to be a very interesting 20 to 30 years. I think there's going to be a lot of discoveries made in the next few decades. And
absolutely.
Can't wait to live through that time. All right. Thank you, Brad. Let's move on to a little lighter subject, entertainment. I can promise you that I don't have words like you had in your article. Okay, I think the most complicated word that I have is the name of this director, Oren Peli, O-R-E-N-P-E-L-I. He is the director of the original Paranormal Activity, and now he's got a new movie coming out that's tackling aliens, and the title of the film is called Area 51, and they released the trailer for it this week. You may not have seen the trailer. Did you see the trailer for this?
No, I have not seen it yet.
Oh, it's so good. It's really good. It's very much got that Paranormal Activity vibe. I mean, it looks like it's filmed using, I don't know, not a camcorder, but somebody's, you know, video on their phone or whatever. So it's got that vibe as well. This is his first film since Paranormal Activity in 2007. The first one that he's directed. He's produced and written several projects in the last 8 years, but Area 51 is his first directorial effort since that breakout found footage film. Using the same style, Area 51 tells another horror story, but this time it's not ghosts that pose the supernatural threat. As the title implies, Area 51 will focus on a group of friends who mess with the wrong extraterrestrial. The film follows Reed, who has always been obsessed with UFOs. While on a weekend trip to Las Vegas, he convinces two friends to join him on a mission to break into Area 51, where they find terrifying proof of alien presence. Area 51 opens in theaters and on demand May 15th. I'm guessing that you'll find it on demand more than you will in theaters. That's just a guess. So the trailer is neat for a couple of reasons. They deal with this technology that basically, I forget how they did it, but the people that break into Area 51 use this clothing and the substance in this clothing to basically mask their body temperatures.
Oh, so, yeah, sure.
So I didn't know that you could actually do this. That's kind of cool. So, like, the snipers or whoever is guarding Area 51 do not see them in the night vision camera. And I thought that was neat. A neat way of going about it. And also there's, they spoiler alert, they get into this bunker that's, because they find out that most of Area 51 is underground. Like the real important stuff, the stuff that they're after is in like an underground bunker at Area 51. And one room they go into is a bunch of children's things, like a, toys. And cribs. Uh-oh. And weird things like that. So I'm guessing that they're going to be dealing with hybrids, possibly.
Hybrids.
Yeah. So if you want to if you like some horror in your alien films, I think Area 51 will fit the bill for you. Again, that it opens May 15th in theaters and on demand.
Wow.
Does that sound appealing to you?
It sounds very creepy, and I've not seen the Paranormal Activity films. I know of them. I've seen snippets from them, but I've not actually seen any of the films in their entirety. But I loves me some horror sometimes, and that sounds like that would be right up my alley.
Yeah, not necessarily. Like, if you're a fan even of, like, other found footage films like Blair Witch Project, which I think is the one that set the standard for most of them ever since, every movie since then.
Yes.
I think you'd like this. But I don't think it's going to make it into my movie-going experience this summer. There's too many other big blockbusters. For example, Avengers Age of Ultron opening in 2 days yeah. from the time that we're recording this. So I think both you and I are probably have those that on our schedule this weekend, I'm guessing.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yeah. So there you go. Let's move on. I've got, because Anessa isn't here, I chose two stories. So here's the other one. U.S. UFO stories fill New York City as terrified earthlings call 911. Dum, 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 dum. So some Hunts Point residents, which is, I believe, in Brooklyn, not Brooklyn, one of the boroughs. It's a neighborhood in one of the boroughs. They called authorities to report what they described as the flying spaceship. This is one of the description. As the flying spaceship moving quickly over East 149th Street and the Buckner Expressway, many witnesses called 911, including one terrified woman, according to an FDNY source. 57-year-old Pigeon Fancier, which is a person that
likes pigeons.
Yeah,
they
keep them in cages, right?
Sure.
Yeah, I never understood that. What's the end game with pigeon fanciers? Like, they're just kept as pets, or do they use them to, like, hunt down rats, or what? Do you know what the deal is?
Or pigeon racing would be my guess.
Racing? Okay.
Oh, yes.
I didn't know that.
Oh, it's a thing.
Okay.
It is a thing. Whoa. Real.
I will have to Google that later on. Anyways, yes. This guy said that he saw fireballs moving at a fast speed from the roof of his building at 11:30 p.m. He mainly saw two bright lights streaking across the horizon. He described the quick movement as too fast for airplanes. And I saw video footage of this, and he's right. They look like they were cruising at a pretty good clip. They were going faster than an airplane would over a big metropolitan city area like that.
Huh.
It's not the first time locals have experienced extraterrestrials that may have visited their neighborhood. In the same area, unusual lights were spotted last year and in 2011. Those witnesses on Saturday and last May have described the same light that just hovered before shot off in just... I think this article is written very poorly. I probably should have gone through it with a fine-tooth comb before I started reading it. They described the same light that just hovered before shooting off in just a matter of a second. According to a UFO journalist by the name of Ryan Sprague, no relation to Gregor from the network, the maneuvers of these objects appear to be not fitting with any current technology that people know. And as a disclaimer, there is an airport near this neighborhood, but from the videos that I've seen, they did not look like... Because I've lived near airports. I've lived in the flight path of airports. And these lights that I saw on these videos did not look like airplane lights. So, take that with whatever grain of whatever you want to take. And it sounds like an interesting story.
How do you like them apples?
Yeah. Apples and salt. Salty apples.
That's got to taste wonderful.
No, it's always cool when we get these mass sightings like this. Like, what was the big one in Salt Lake City Was it Salt Lake City? Or no, it was Phoenix. The Phoenix Lights.
Okay.
Do you remember that?
Kind of.
It was like a big triangle. Kind of. These lights that made a big triangle. It was, I want to say, late 90s, early 2000s, I think. No, 90s. 1990s sometime.
Interesting. Yeah, I can't place it.
Yeah, it's a thing. It's a thing, Brad.
It's definitely a thing.
Okay. So there you go, our stories this week. A UFO mass sighting in New York. The director of Paranormal Activity taking on aliens in his new film, Area 51. And that crazy science-y thing that Brad talked about.
It wasn't that overly technical.
Something with Saturn's moon Titan and the atmosphere and using it to as a
spectral spirograph, whatever.
Yeah. I understood when you read it, but I really can't describe what you talked about in the way it should sure. be.
Fair enough.
All right, let's move on to the next feature. Here we go.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black, triangular, three-dimensional shape. Huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a dome. I could see the occupants in it.
Appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
It's time for Craft Corner. Corner, aka a famous alien spacecraft in history. Now, we have two categories that we usually draw from. We have the flying saucer that people have claimed to see in the skies, like your typical flying saucer shape, your triangle shapes, your diamond shapes, your chevron. The list goes on and on. We've covered a lot of those. But the other category that we pick from is fictitious craft from movies, TV shows, comic books, video games, so on. And that's what it looks like you have taken from this week. So what do you got for the Craft Corner, Brad?
What I've got this week is something from a beloved sci-fi TV show. Very beloved. And it's not Firefly. Because Firefly didn't have any aliens.
No, that was a alien-less, alien, what's the word? Alien-less?
An alien-free series.
Yeah, alien-free universe.
It was more about, could you make an argument that colonized, because basically the worlds were colonized in Firefly. Could you ever make an... Do you think through, like, it's, say, thousands of years through, you know, evolution, do you think they could eventually be called aliens?
Yeah, I think if your biology was greatly different, or, like, if you compared the source material to the new people that went out and settled this planet, what they ended up looking, sounding, being like, if it's so great... The difference is so great, then I think you could call them aliens. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. But, anyways, that doesn't really apply here. What does apply is that the ship we're going to talk about is the Farscape 1. Farscape being named after this particular craft. Now, the Farscape 1 was John Crichton's space module that was originally designed to be able to survive high acceleration from a gravitational slingshot about the Earth. That slingshot was a wormhole. He had theorized that you could travel great distances through a wormhole, and it was possible to do. And by golly, if he didn't do it. Crichton arrived in the uncharted territories via this craft after accidentally traveling through a wormhole from Earth. Though Farscape 1 was considered relatively primitive by the standards of the other races Crichton encountered, it was somehow able to navigate wormholes where some other, more sophisticated craft, notably Peacekeeper Prowlers, and the Peacekeepers were, boy, the Peacekeepers were a race of, they were bodyguards for hire, essentially, is how they started out. Other races, if they didn't have an ability to defend themselves, they would hire the Peacekeepers, and eventually the Peacekeepers just decided to take matters into their own hands. So, anyways, they could not these Peacekeeper prowlers or other ships could not travel these wormholes without liquefying the passengers. John modified the Farscape 1 module extensively through using organic parts from Moya so that it could use various alternate fuels. This allowed it to achieve speeds that were not possible before its modification.
I have a question, Brad.
Yes, I may have an answer.
What is Moya?
Moya was the living ship that the crew of the Farscape crew ended up traveling in. And Moya was from a race of beings that were sentient, but they had the ability to travel. They had the ability to travel in hyperspace or through hyperspace, and they had the ability to host organisms inside of it. So they could live and travel with these. Basically, the Moya ship needed a pilot first off, a creature that actually bonded with Moya and could communicate and sort of, what's a good kind of translate with the passengers, as it were, to all work together and travel inside of Moya.
Okay, thank you.
There were so many interesting things that happened with that show and with Moya, but that's not what we're talking about.
We're talking about the other ship.
The Farscape 1.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about the Farscape 1 is it was actually designed from a NASA ship that was a concept sketch of a proposed reusable spacecraft. So it has a little bit of the look of the space shuttle. There's hints of the space shuttle to its look. But it was based on a drawing of an earlier, a proposed replacement craft for the space shuttle.
Does it look like that space plane that the U.S. Air Force has sent up a few times? Because that looks like a smaller version of the space shuttle.
Yeah, because if I recall, that's the one that has no human beings in it. It
yes.
is completely automated, and I can't remember if it's flown by computers or flown remotely, but yeah, there are no living beings inside of it, and they have all sorts of experiments or other things that they run with.
Yeah, they're going up again. They're going to test that ion drive.
Nice.
Yeah. So anyways, sorry.
Yeah, and that's pretty much all that I have on that.
Okay.
The Farscape 1.
I have tried to watch Farscape a few times, but I can't get over the whole Muppet thing. Like, some of the characters look like Muppets. And that just... I know it shouldn't bother me, and I'm not being a Muppist. it's just... Some things I can't grasp. Like, I can't make, in my head, make them real. You know, like, I don't know what I'm trying to say. It just looks kind of goofy to me.
Yeah, I can see that. And part of that is because Jim Henson's workshop had a hand in this show. And that's part of where I think you get some of that flavor, that Muppet flavor, as it were.
Muppet flavor.
Muppet flavor. See, now this is, now we have a title. This is
that's a Muppet. You know what? I could totally see that being a flavor of a chip.
I don't know about that.
Where I am in Canada, or Canada, period, they're crazy about their chips. Like, if you eat any kind of chip that doesn't have a flavor to it, you're considered like a freak, a weirdo. So, like, I don't like flavored chips. I like plain chips, just salted chips, and they treat me like I'm some kind of pariah up here.
That's weird.
Yeah, it is. No, that's not weird. I'm the weirdo. I'm the weirdo for not liking flavored chips. Anyways, Muppet flavor. Look for it in your local grocer's freezer. All right. We would love to get your feedback, your thoughts on the stuff that we've talked about. Either on this episode or any other episode of the Alien Invasion podcast, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com is our email address. You can also call our voicemail number. That's 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966, or just go to the website, galacticnetcasts.com, and there's a little, what looks like a vertical piece of wood or something on the right-hand side of every page on the website. You click on that, and you can leave a recorded message right there on the website. And if you're going through your mobile phone, through your mobile browser, it works that way too. It's actually easier that way because you don't have to like hook up a microphone, or you just use your phone to record the message. And we would love to hear your thoughts on any of the stuff that we tackle on this podcast. Again, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, voicemail 805-328-3966, or leave a message on the website galacticnetcasts.com. Okay. Let's move on to picks. These are things that we have watched, listened to, read, played like a video game. These are our picks for the week, and this is kind of in my wheelhouse. I love the documentary series, and I found a new one this week. It's called The Unexplained Files. I'm sure that you've seen at least one episode of this show, Brad.
Possibly.
Yeah. I think it's, I don't remember what channel, was it Science Channel I was listening, or I was watching it on? It's one of the Discovery channels. Anyways, they had an episode called Disappearing Pilot and Texas Blue Dogs. So it's one of those shows where they split up into two separate subjects. It's unexplained things. But I want to just talk about the first one, which was Disappearing Pilot. And I think we've talked about this case before on the Alien Invasion. It's a pilot from Australia that went missing. He reported, and this is a very rare case because you hear of pilots reporting seeing unidentified flying objects while they're flying, but they almost always survive. They come back to report them. This person did not survive. He disappeared. They searched for him for 3 days without any sign of a downed aircraft, wreckage, a body, nothing. This is 1978. His name was Fred Valench, and he was he was leaving from where he lived or where he flew out of in Australia to this island just off the coast, so it was over the ocean, to pick up, I forget what it was, I think some kind of sea product, like seafood. And he was just a regular delivery driver. He picked up supplies and brought them back to the mainland and vice versa, went back and forth. So he was pretty, you know, experienced, did this regularly, this same route. But one day he radioed in that he saw an unidentified flying object that was something that was definitely not another aircraft. It was a solid, metallic-looking craft in the sky. There's actually there's a recording of him reporting this back to the tower where he took off from. And the guy that it was really, really interesting because the guy that was doing the investigation on this talked to a lot of different people. He talked to the actual radio operator at the tower, the air traffic control place at the airport where he flew out of, and that guy actually got emotional about it because he was the last person to talk to this guy, and which I thought spoke volumes to this case. They interviewed his brother. His brother said he was not trying to commit suicide. He was a happy-go-lucky guy. He wasn't trying to get up, like he wasn't trying to disappear. So that's one of the theories that was floating out there, that he actually used this as a way to disappear, to like start over someplace, which they highly doubt. They also talk about, you know, could it be another type of aircraft that we don't know of, but that was kind of dismissed as well. It's really, really interesting. I highly suggest it. We'll put a link in the show notes to Amazon.com where you can watch it. via their streaming service. It's like $1.99 or something like that. So it's called The Unexplained Files. That's the series. And it's actually the first episode, the pilot episode of the series. It's called Disappearing Pilot and Texas Blue Dogs. If you like weird things like, not xenomorphs, that's alien, cryptids like Bigfoot and those kind of things, Texas Blue Dogs, that's kind of, that would be up your area of interest as well. So watch this episode for both those, the UFO and then the weird creatures.
Huh.
Okay, that's my pick. What do you got?
Well, what I've got is a short film called Alien Infection, and it's from, I couldn't quite determine where it was from, because what I'm seeing is German. But
what?
Yeah, it's, well, it's made by somebody who speaks German.
Oh, okay.
And I'm going to try to get a translation, of course.
I could totally tell that you did something on your computer because your bandwidth crapped out for a second.
It dropped. Yeah, it did. Okay. So I'm going to do there. Okay. So it is a 6.5-minute short film, and it follows the adventure of a young man who is tired, goes to bed, and then an alien appears in the doorway of his bedroom, and you see it have a scalpel, and it makes an incision in his abdomen. So he is, you know, chained to the bed, and just like classic trope of, you know, at least this time he's not being taken to this ship. I guess the classic trope.
Yeah, I was going to say, these are pretty lazy aliens if they're not taking them to the ship. You're supposed to be taken to the ship. That's the most fun part of it. What the hell?
Yes. And I don't want to give anything away because it's 6.5 minutes. But it is definitely done by somebody who is interested in the genre, is very early in his career of filmmaking, and posts, I just translated the German. This was done rather quickly, so he apologizes for some of the roughness of the particular piece. And looking at the site where I found this, he does a lot of videos, recording gameplay, and does the occasional short film here and there.
Oh, but he's at that level. He's just like an total amateur, sounds like.
Yes, yes, he is. Very much so. You know, for being an early effort, it's not bad. It's interesting. And the ending left me scratching my head a little bit. There is no dialogue in the film whatsoever. It is merely you seeing sort of what I would consider maybe a 24-hour period of this individual's life that starts with the investigation of him by the aliens and what happens the next day.
Okay.
So we'll have a link to this video in the show notes. And yeah, it's an interesting concept. It needs some work. But, you know, if you've got 6.5 minutes to just check something out from an amateur who, you know, looks like they want to do more. Go ahead, check it out.
Where did you find this?
It was on YouTube.
Okay. There's some great short films on YouTube and Vimeo both.
This is
they're great because, you know, if it's bad, you can just turn it off. You're not losing any, like, you didn't pay any money to see it. And if it's bad also, it's short. So, you know, you're not going to be wasting that much time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay. All right, so in review, our picks this week were The Unexplained Files, episode number 1, Disappearing Pilot and Texas Blue Dogs, and Brad's short film, Alien Infection. What did he get prescribed to get rid of that alien infection? Some antibiotic?
Well, he did take some medication.
Oh, he did? Okay. Was it prescribed or just something out over the counter?
over the counter.
Okay, all right. And we'll have the links to our picks in the show notes as well. Thank you for joining us for this episode of The Alien Invasion. You can get more on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/galacticnetcasts. We're also available on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever fine podcasts are made available for free. If you get your podcasts through iTunes, please leave us 5 stars and a positive review. Just 5 stars is fine. That helps more people discover our podcast. For all things that we do, the Galactic Netcast Network, you can go to galacticnetcasts.com. We have a number of podcasts, other podcasts, including the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, Weird World Weekly, Brad's somewhat new show, Adventure Party. Do you want to just describe it real quick for people that aren't aware of it or don't know anything about it, Brad?
Adventure Party is about an hour-long podcast where we do a little bit of the news. We do a Kickstarter spotlight. We spotlight a game, and this is mostly like tabletop games and RPGs. We do have a news bit from a contributor, Matt Ryan, who has been on the Sci-Fi Geeks Club as a guest. And he provides us with a little bit of news more from the digital side of the street in gaming. And then we spend at least a half an hour talking to somebody on a subject in gaming, tabletop or role-playing games like Dungeons & Dragons or Pathfinder, Shadowrunner, White Wolf, or Ad Infinitum. And they're knowledgeable on that particular subject. And the last one that we recorded, which... went almost 2 hours. It is the longest podcast I've ever been a part of, and it will be edited. If you want to see the video, you can always check us out on our channel on YouTube, youtube.com/galacticnetcasts. And it was a deconstruction, almost, as it were, of a very difficult and interesting topic. And it needed to have that bit of time to really go through and discuss. It was about morals in the characters you play and the comfort level of the players in the game and how you work that.
Okay.
It's if you're into gaming and into role playing, it was probably an interesting episode. At least I'm hoping it was. So
okay.
There you go.
I encourage everybody to subscribe to our mega feed, because on the mega feed you get every single one of our podcasts: The Alien Invasion, The Sci-Fi Geeks Club, Weird World Weekly, Adventure Party. And we've got these small little bite-sized ones called Galactic Net Bites that cover video game, like you said, with Ryan Murphy. We've got the comic book one. We've got Doctor Who, the S-word, which talks about science. And we've got more coming up in the future. So the mega feed is the one that you want to subscribe to. Just go to galacticnetcasts.com and click on subscribe, and you get it. That's easy peasy. So that's going to do it for this episode of The Alien Invasion. And as always, Brad, final thought, what do you got?
Avengers this weekend. I'm so excited.
I am too. We'll talk about it next.
Actually, an SNL. Yeah. Oh, and Ines and I are going to the Twin Cities to see something that we've talked about either in this podcast or in the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. We're going to see a live showing of or a live recording of Welcome to Night Vale.
Cool. You're going to have a fun weekend, it sounds like.
Busy and fun. Yes.
All right. Until next time, Brad, we'll talk to you later.
Sounds good, Dave.
Bye.
Who knew? A brief collection of gossip, news and rumours transcending space and time. It's hide behind the sofa time as a sinister looking creature is spotted on set. It looks creepy in the dark. And not much better in the light. A sort of robot meets deep sea diver with a massive, massive gun. It's sort of lumbering and creepy. There's lots of pictures being shown about this. Check our show notes to find out more. If, like me, you enjoy a good cover version of the great theme tune, then I'm sure you'll like Player Piano's version of this famous one. I hope it makes you smile like it made me smile. Filming news now, and Cormston Medieval Village is closed until the 15th of May because of filming. Now, we touched on this last week, but rejoice now, Clara fans! She's been seen on set dressed in an orange astronaut suit. Yeah, that orange astronaut suit. But haven't you been bleating on that this is a Viking episode, Daryl? I know, it's weird, isn't it? Robots and astronauts and Vikings. And we have had confirmed pictures of Vikings now. And a few other pictures of the cast and crew. I mean, for instance, we'll see the Doctor's trousers. Oh, awesome! And we'll also check out his swordsmanship. There's a few other pictures knocking about. I've left some links in the show notes. Please do take a look. Tell me what you think. Better still, tell the Galactic Netcast team what you think. We've seen some read-through pictures as well. We know that Rufus Hound is playing a character called Sam Swift. But, isn't somebody missing from that table? Well, she might be filming, I suppose. Also posted onto one of the spoiler forums has been a list of possible titles. Now, some of these are confirmed, but some of them, well, they haven't been confirmed and they are a little bit bleak. It's hardly as much fun as a barrel of monkeys. Now, these may or may not be true. Please take a look. Why don't you tell Dave and the team what you think? I know I will. Now, don't forget to keep up with the news at Den of Geek. They provide a weekly summary, almost as good as this news snippet. Such great links to articles. There's a nice one all about Moffat, Clara and Missy from Cult Box. Again, show notes, people. Show notes, people! Now, long gone are the effects of wobbly sets, monsters made of tinfoil and bubble wrap. The effects are so good, they've won an award. They've picked up the BAFTA for Special Visual and Graphic Effects for 2015. Well done, team. Now, it's been reported that Stephen Moffat is changing the rhythm of Doctor Who for Series 9. He's done a little 4-minute vid all about it. Doesn't he do this every year? Ah, now whilst we're here, I suppose it would be rude of us not to wish a belated happy birthday to Jenna as she reaches the age of 29. 29! We've posted a link to 29 reasons to love this popular actress. And finally, Star Wars fans, Doctor Who fans, what would happen if R2-D2 got the Doctor Who treatment? Well, this beloved astromech gets the Dalek treatment. It's actually a really great picture and shows the imagination of the creator. Now, come here, BB-8. Let's see if we can do this to you. This podcast was brought to you by Imperial Steam. You can check me out on Facebook, on Twitter at Imperial Gnome, or email me imperialgnome@gmail.com.
You have been listening to a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com. For more about the show you just listened to, including how to subscribe, give us feedback, links to our social feeds, and more, please visit www.galacticnetcasts.com.